NIV version says two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? The one may be overpowered. Two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Amen. I struggle with this. I always struggle with putting a tag on my text because some of the stuff that comes to my mind, if I say it at the beginning, I'll derail some of y'all. And so there's really something I want to say, but I can't say it till I get to the end, because if I say it now, I'll never get some of y'all back. So for the sake of getting us started, this is something worth emulating, something worth copying, something worth pursuing. But I'll tell you at the end what I really wanted to tell you. Solomon is given credit for the writing of this book. And it's as almost as if, I don't know if he's on his porch looking out or if he has a mountain view, but the chapter begins with the word, "Again I looked and saw." And there's some things he has seen, and I know what he's looking at. He's watching people. He's watching people as they engage and do life. He's watching people as they engage with each other. And he chronicles some things that he sees. And the truth is, when you watch people, you'll discover that there's some things you see that makes your heart break. And then there are some things that inspire you. There's some things that you see that will make you want to cuss and cut somebody. And there's some other things that you want to copy everywhere you go. The context of where I'm preaching from today in chapter four, verse one, he starts talking about oppressors, people who are oppressing others. He talks about people who have reached a level where they have power. And the tragedy for some is that when they arrive at a point where they have some power, the shame is that sometimes people with power use their power to put down others. And he talks about the tears that come from those who are oppressed. And he doesn't go into a whole lot of detail about ultimately what happens, because the truth is, you need to know that God is an avenger. Make no mistake about it, God is an avenger. Meaning that you don't have to waste any time, energy, and effort trying to get folk back. God in his own time, in his own way. And sometimes he'll do it so publicly that you will know that it was nobody but the Lord. If you don't believe me, look back through history and you'll see some people who stood and said what absolutely would never happen as long as they were living. And then God put them in a wheelchair and they never stood again. Because the God we serve, he is the avenger. But there are some other things that he wrote about. There are about three characters, three or four individuals. There's about three individuals and then a couple that he writes about. And I want to lift them up to you because he's watching these individuals. The first one I want to call, this person is extremely industrious. You'll see him or her in verse number 4. Verse number 4 says, "And I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another." He talks about this industrious person. Let me describe this industrious person for you. This industrious person in verse number 4 is a person who is in the who finds himself in the rat race. He's eager, running, trying to achieve and acquire. He's trying to achieve and acquire. And the more he achieves, the more he wants to achieve. The more he acquires, the more he wants to acquire. And this individual is running, spending all of his time and energy toiling, constantly trying to get, constantly trying to achieve. He's in this rat race, and he's a person, he's in such a rat race that he never takes time to rest. He never takes time to really enjoy life because he's in a rat race. And when you keep reading, you'll discover the struggle with this individual. It's absolutely nothing wrong with working. God has ordained that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with wanting something a little better than what you got. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with wanting a little more for your children than you had. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. The struggle with this person is that they're working and they're motivated by envy. They're in the rat race with the attempt of trying to be the top dog. They're wanting to be the one that's at the top. It reminds me of my uncles back in the day, back in Hopkinsville on Sunday. Even if they didn't make it to church, everybody made it to Grandmama's house after church. And they would come in by a parade. One would drive in. He, I remember Uncle Fuzzy, he would drive in with the Cutlass. And he had a struggle getting to church because he always had to wash his car before he came to the country. And they would, we had a gravel road that was about 3/4 of a mile long, and you would see him come over the hill, but then it took him about 5 minutes to get 3/4 of a mile because he didn't want to raise up the dust because he spent the time washing the car that morning and putting joy on the wheels because Armor-All hadn't been invented. And he wanted to make the parade to get to the house because there was a parade so that when he pulled up, everybody would see that white gleaming Cutlass. And he would step out of the car and he would have on his absolute best. Uncle Fuzzy would come. And then after Uncle Fuzzy, Uncle Major, he would roll up in a Grand Prix. And it was as if every Sunday they were trying to figure out who was going to outdo the other person, whose car was going to be the best, whose outfit was going to be the best, who had the most reins. And y'all ain't got to look at me all funny, because y'all know people that every time somebody else gets something that they perceive a little better, then they got to go out and get another one. We've ended up with parking lots. And ain't nothing wrong with a parking lot with $5 million worth of vehicles in it. Ain't nothing wrong. Drive what you can afford. But for some people, the motivation is envy. And listen to what the writer says. The writer says, this person who can never be satisfied, where nothing is good enough, is an individual that is chasing the wind. Meaning, anybody who chases the wind, you are going to be extremely frustrated because you never can catch it. There's always going to be another vet. There's always going to be another McLaren. There's always going to be a bigger Porsche. There's always going to be a new Cadillac. And our country is in the business of convincing you to be discontented so that you will buy something else. He talks about the industrious person. They're chasing the wind. Then there's a person, I'll call him, he's indifferent. Here's how the writer talks about him. He's a person who folds his hands. Now this individual ain't in no race. He ain't running nowhere. You got one person that works too much for the wrong reason. And then you got the other extreme, this person won't work at all. And here's one of the sad things about living in the United States of America is that it really don't take a whole lot to survive if that's all you want. Because there's some people ain't punched a clock. I was laughing the other night in my men's group, some fellas were talking about someone who had hit him up after service. And I need to help y'all, so y'all need to know. And he said, yeah, there was this guy waiting on us to get out of church. I said, yeah, he's single dad, came down here to be with his girlfriend, got two kids, he's got the custody. And they looked at me as if to say, how you know? And here's my struggle. You got sense enough to wait on folk to come out of church, but you ain't got enough sense to come in church. I don't mind saying no to y'all, to you, because you got sense enough to wait till we get outside, but you ain't got sense enough to come on the inside, which makes me think you trying to play somebody. No. No. This person runs nowhere. They fold the hands. And the consequences is going to be real ruin. And the ruin that they're going to experience, it's not because of somebody else. It's because of their refusal to prepare for their own future. Here's what the text says. They're going to reap ruin because they refuse to prepare for their future. That's verse number five. Look at verse number eight. Verse number eight, you got another character that he lists. Verse number eight, it's an interesting character. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. And for whom am I toiling? And why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless and miserable. It's a miserable business. This is the independent person. This independent person, here's his deal. He has nobody. But he doesn't have anybody because he don't want nobody. He has nobody because he wants nobody because he doesn't think he needs anybody. Don't know anything about his background. It could have been he got his heart hurt. I don't know. I don't know. But he ultimately doesn't want nobody. He doesn't have nobody because he doesn't need anybody. He lives for himself. Gets all he can. Evie Hill said, he cans all he gets, and then he sits on the can. Because he has everything he wants. But then ultimately, he discovers that life was designed to be shared. Because the truth is, what good is it having it if you can't share it? The real joy, there is a joy in accomplishing and acquiring. But after you've acquired it, there's something even more exciting about sharing it. Let me testify since I got the mic. I worked real hard sacking groceries, and by the grace of God, God allowed my mother to be in an accident. Didn't hurt her, but she did receive a little money. And I saw a car that I wanted at my high school. The assistant principal was selling it. And I told my daddy about it, and he asked me how I was going to pay for it. And I said, well, they want $850, but I don't have enough money saved yet. And my daddy said, I think it's a good car. Why don't you ask your mama if she will loan you the money for the car? Key word, loan. Since you're working, you have the ability to pay her back. And so I got my most polite smile, got my best tone of voice, and asked my mama, would she loan me? And she said, of course I will. And she loaned me the money, and I was able to buy my first car, 70 Oldsmobile 88. That summer, I was blessed to be able to work at the post office, and it was on then. Paid that car off, and it was on then, on and popping. New paint job, on and popping. Interior redone, on and popping. Keystone Sun spokes. Old school. Sometimes I do it with the basket, sometimes I do it without the basket. It was on and popping, and then all I needed was a boo. And the good God I serve allowed Trudy decided to let me talk to her. And I really never knew how good that car looked, Ron, until the day she was in it and drove off. I really couldn't appreciate it when I was in it by myself because I couldn't see myself. But when she was in it, and she used to wear this little yellow sundress, good God. And yellow and green go together. I don't know where she was going, but I was staying at the house with her dad trying to get me some brownie points in, and she was going somewhere, and I gave her the keys, and she walked around and got in that car. And when she drove off, I said, ooh, future sure looked good to me. Lest you think I forgot, my point was, it was nice having it. My point was, it was nice having it, but it was better sharing it. Yeah. But then finally he gets to this person, to this couple that I've been anxious to get to. I knew I had a ways to go today. I got to hustle. We looked at the independent person. We looked at this indifferent person, and we saw this industrious person. This last person that he lifts up, this person is interlocked in a relationship. He's in an interdependent relationship. He's interlocked. And when he talks about this person, he starts off saying, two are better than one. Now let me help somebody. Single folk, don't get discouraged. Let's just look at the word and enjoy the word today. He says, two are better than one. Now, let me help you. I believe, with all my heart, I believe he's talking about a married couple. I really do. I think he's talking about a married couple, especially as you go a little further and they lay down and all of that. I think he's talking about a married couple. But I also know that this is a relationship that goes beyond being in love. This is not that in love. Because here's what you need to know. I want to help somebody, and I'm not trying to hurt you at all, but the feeling of being in love, it's illusional. It's emotional. It's temporary. And it's real, but it's illusional. See, when I was in love, there's some stuff I couldn't see. Even though it was right in front of my face. You start saying stuff that don't make sense. You start calling people perfect. That in love is an emotion. It's illusional. It doesn't last long. And I know I'm right because you hear people saying, I fell in love. And then after a while, we fell out of love. Well, how do you fall in and how do you fall out? it's because the definition, and we live in a world that have rewritten the definition of what God intended for us as it relates to understanding what true love is. It goes beyond emotion. See, here's the truth. The truth is, most of us, we have an emotional love tank, and most of us live with an emotional love tank on fumes. Because we don't always receive love in the way that we need to receive it. And then every now and then, if you're operating on fumes in your emotional love tank, then there can be some really simple things that can cause you to have a love alert. Sometimes physical attraction can cause you to have a love alert. And you see somebody who you're physically attracted to, and you don't even know them, but you have a love alert that gets your attention. But that ain't love, it's just, that's what I like. Sometimes it's physical attraction, sometimes it's personal attention. Somebody pays a little attention to you, and then all of a sudden, but often what that will lead to, physical attraction and personal attention, will lead to you wanting to enter into the progress of getting to know the person better. And there's nothing wrong with that. And so you go and you have a hamburger, but you know it ain't got nothing to do with the hamburger. You're just trying to figure out, is this someone I really want to get to know? And then sometimes immediately, right before the hamburger comes, you know this is somebody you don't want to get to know. And you looking for your exit clause because you knew this was a mistake. But then sometimes you discover maybe there are some things. Maybe there's some things that, you know, we have in common and all of that. But I love what this one brother, he wrote a book. I'll remember his name in a moment. He wrote a book. He said, "I kissed dating goodbye." It should be a recall on dating, because what he discovered was there's a lot of people, they date to mate. And there's a difference from dating to mate and dating to marry. Some folk ain't thinking about marrying nobody. They're just trying to quench a thirst. And if they can get it off Steak and Shake, they'll get off Steak and Shake. If it takes a Cracker Barrel, they'll do a Cracker Barrel. If it takes a Red Lobster, they'll do a Red Lobster. They just, because it takes a different level for different. Some all it takes is a Zestos. For others, it takes, do you fear God? For others, what's the last Bible study you've been in? For others, what did the pastor preach about last week? The others, where you work? I mean, it just takes different things for different people. This is far beyond in love. And my heart breaks because sometimes when people haven't been loved the right way, they become vulnerable. Sometimes they know they shouldn't, but they do it because they're so desperate to feel loved. Then the other side, after you've been burned a few times, you don't ever want to forget it. It's just going to be me and Jesus. You can become hard-hearted, bitter. But listen to this relationship. I'll get through it. Here, listen to what he says. Listen to what he says about this relationship. Two are better than one because they have a good return. See, the truth is, when you finally come down, even if you end up marrying, and when you finally get through all the emotion, you discover that relationships take work. And listen to what he says. Listen to what he says. When you are working together, listen to how he describes it. You have a good return for your labor. Let me show you what that really looks like. It means that you have a good return on your investment. It's called a ROI. There's a professor that I sit at his feet every month or so. And he always shares with me these formulas because he's wanting me to calculate, are you getting a good ROI? Do you have a good return on your investment? When you consider all that you have invested, and now when you look at where you are, is there a decent return? Because the kind of love that God wants us to have for each other and in our relationships, it ought to be helping somebody to become better. Let me testify since I have the mic. I know for a fact that The return on my investment absolutely would have never happened if it had not been for the woman that God gave me. I'm a better person. I have more money than I ever would have had. And if it wasn't for her breaks, because there are times she looks at me and I'll say, "What?" We were talking the other day, and I said, she was telling me about this particular account. She said, "You know, our investments have gone down a little bit." I said, "Really?" I said, "What's in there?" She said, "Why you want to know?" She says, "Because you get ideas." But I got sense enough to know that when I was 21 and married her, I had the return on my little on that investment. I'm stronger. I'm a better person. We have more. We've accomplished some things. Our children have a good foundation. It's an amazing return on that investment. Is your life growing as a result? And I'm not talking about trying to measure that with sizes of house and money in the bank. But look at what the text says. When y'all are working together, there's a greater return on your investment. Here's the other one. Not only is this kind of love work, but it requires an extended walk. Let me show you. There is something that's inevitable when people walk together. Desley, it's in verse 10. And here's what it says. Sooner or later, it's good to have somebody because it's inevitable. You are liable to fall. And anybody can fall. But this is a love that when the person falls, you got somebody. Look at what the text says. You got somebody who's able to pick you up. No, let me to help you up. Cause grown folk, it's hard to pick up. It's better to help them up, and here's what that means. That means you fail, but you are at least applying some energy to try to get yourself up on your own feet. And you got somebody where you don't have to do it all by yourself. Talk to me. It's good to have somebody to help you. You can fall. Even on a smooth surface, you can fall. And you want to know the quality? You can always know the quality of an awesome team. You'll see it in sports if you look closely. When one of the players go down because he's been exerting effort on behalf of the team and he goes down, watch the other players. Because on a good team, every other player will rush to that person who has fallen. I know they're in shape. I know they can press 330. I know they've been running sprints, but they, in sacrificing for the team, they fell. And they rush to him to get him back on. Get him back on his feet. You can fall physically. You can fall spiritually. But if they do it in basketball, we got to learn how to do it as a family. To help folk get back up. It says it's good to have somebody who's able to help you. Unless you get unless you get beside yourself, you ought to do it. I want to encourage you to do it, to help them, because it might be you who need help next time. This kind of love takes work. This kind of love takes a long walk. It's a long walk. Look at verse number 11. He talks about if two lie down together, they'll keep warm. It talks about the warmth of a relationship. The idea of being in their presence. Wow. It's the in their presence you are accepted. In their presence you are loved. In their presence you are appreciated. When you are in this world, we remember where we started in verse number one. There are oppressors in verse number one. There's some mean things that happens out in this world, but it's good to have a refuge. It's good to have somebody that will love you, that will comfort you, that will console you. He talks about the warmth. When you lie down together, you encourage, you're blessing, you're warming each other. Then in verse 12, he talks about the fact, because we're not on a cruise ship. Trudy was telling me the other day how Tony Evans gave this illustration that many of us, we think that being in church is on a cruise ship. And everybody bring you everything. They serve you because you're on a cruise ship. But the truth is, we're on a warship. We may be in smooth waters, but make no mistake about it, you've got an adversary that is always lurking, trying to disrupt and destroy. And it's good to have somebody who got your back. Look at what he said. The one may overpower, two can defend themselves. You don't believe it? Even horses got sense enough to position themselves so they can help each other. You don't believe me? Next time you see a pasture with some horses in it, slow down. And here's what you're going to discover. You're going to discover if it's just one or two of them, you're going to see one facing this way, and you're going to see the other ones face this way because they can't see 360 degrees. But you got one that says, I got this. And the other one says, well, I'm watching over here. And when the two cooperate together, you got full coverage, because we all know there are animals out there that like. Then all of a sudden, he closes out and says, a cord of three strands is not easily broken. Arvana, when I was reading this, it said, two's better than one. And then I was thinking to myself, where did the third cord come from? Two. Warmth, work, walk, work, warmth, two. Then it says, strand of three cords. Where'd the third one come from? Well, let's see. let's see if this is true. Strand of three cords is not easily broken. Let me see. Hey, Brother Griffin, would you help me out, you and sis? Brother Griffin, would you help me out real quick? I just want to see. Let's see. You got one. Thank you, Brother Griffin. All right. There you go. Would y'all pull that and see if y'all can break it? Y'all can? Really? Yeah, I want you to. Because there's some folks trying to. Okay, because your enemy, there's an enemy trying to, well, yeah, there's someone trying to see y'all broke, okay? Yeah. Okay. Good. Gotcha. Now, I took three. I took the blue one, the pink one, and the gold one. Now, let's see. Let's see if you can break that. Oh, you broke it. Not easily. Okay, y'all can sit down. No, y'all can sit down. Y'all can sit down. Yeah. Make no mistake about it. By yourself, there's somebody trying to break you. Blue or pink. The text says when you put them together, didn't say it wouldn't break. Not easily. Didn't say it wouldn't, it couldn't fall, couldn't be separated, but not easily. Who's the third cord? See, did you see it? See what happens when we come down off the in love and we're walking and working, it's almost like a tug of war. It's like the goal is I'm trying to get her over here. She's trying to get me over here. And we struggling. Back and forth. And sometimes we make it through it, sometimes people don't. But it's a struggle because she doesn't know it, but things would be so much better if she just come over here. And she's saying, he ain't got no sense. I'm the smart one. And when you spend a whole lot of time doing the tug of war, it just makes you, well, you just stay over there then, and I'll stay over here. And you discover that there's some distance now. So how can we ever get close again? I'll show you. It's really not about me trying to drag her over here, and she's trying to drag me. Charlie, it ends up like this. It's really the idea that it's kind of like a triangle. And the triangle is kind of like this. I ain't stuttin' getting close to her no more. I'm gonna try to get close to God. And here's what'll happen if the two people who say they love God, if they get closer to God, it's inevitable. You can't help it. You get close to each other. Y'all, that's the best I can do. I ain't telling you what I heard. I'm telling you what I lived. The closer you get to God, the closer you will become to each other. And so the answer to the question that I really wanted to tell you is the God we serve wants you to have a threesome. I told you. I'd never get you back. I told you. We couldn't handle it. But he wants the third chord to be him. And if you'll put him in it, that chord will not be easily broken.